Hi, welcome to Laugh Lines, a podcast where I draw and interview some of my favorite LA comedians. This week, we have Larry White, a good friend that I met through a stand-up class. He has come a long way in a short time, and I am excited to bring this conversation to you. Enjoy. Larry, first, thank you so much for coming. It has been just even nice to see you and catch up again, and I'm really grateful that you're here to have this conversation.
Thank you for having me. This is very cool.
Yeah. I got to meet you. It was last fall.
Yeah.
It was last fall, and so you've been doing comedy for 8 months?
Maybe nine now.
Maybe nine now, yeah. And I love the story you tell about how we first kind of met and how we first kind of had our conversation. Would you mind retelling that for everyone?
It's had an impact on me. So we met in a comedy class. We're all students, and we obviously we had to build our own bits, and we workshop with each other. And I don't think anyone knew what I was going to say, and I was doing a bit about my girlfriend and therapy. And I remember doing the jokes I thought were funny, but they were a little, I don't know, too mean. And I remember you saying something to the effect of, oh, I thought you were an asshole. But when you got to the end, I realized you're not. And I think I said something to the effect of, like, did I go too hard in the beginning? You're like, a little bit.
Like, as tactfully as I could.
Yeah, a little just, bit. Just a tiny like, bit. Try to understand the female perspective a little more. She's like, but I love what you do. You're like, I love what you're doing, and it's great. So then, like, I kind of had a bunch of questions for you. Like, can I get away with this? Can I get away with that? And you're like, well, let me tell you the other point of view you don't know. And I've carried that with me ever since. It's kind of like part of what I do now. I do this, like, I know what the audience sees me as.
Mm.
I'd say I think I do.
Mm.
And I grant that to them for a little while until I, like, reveal that I'm not that guy. And that's one thing I've probably done in a lot of my bits, and I learned that with you.
Thank you. I remember that specific class, like, that day. And I remember sitting back and listening and be like, oh, my God, this guy, what an asshole.
Yep.
And then being like, I get it.
You see what he's trying to do?
I get it. I see where he's... Okay. He got there, but he lost me on the way.
That was exactly what you said, yeah.
He lost me. And so it was like, you know, I'm just glad that you were open to... I mean, we were in a space where it was agreed that we were going to give each other feedback, and mm-hmm. we were there to support each other. And I'm really glad that you were the kind of person that... recognize that, like, oh, we are in a space of helping each other, and she wants the best for me, and, like, you heard me. And I think, man, it your set that night killed, like, when we graduated and did the show
thank
together.
You so much.
Yeah,
it was funny because I remember, like, we did, like, a sidebar chat. It wasn't in front of anyone.
Oh no, it was private. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're like, I lost you. You're like, a little bit. You got me back, but maybe don't lose me next time.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, help me with that.
Yeah.
And you did.
Oh, it was great. And just for people who are listening and maybe haven't seen you on stage, you talked about leaning in to the assumptions people have about who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about what it is people assume you are, who they assume you are when they see you or hear you?
Mm-hmm.
And where do you take it?
So I even do this on job interviews sometimes. It's like, I know what I look and sound like. I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
Like, I think the second people meet me, they're like, oh, I know who this guy is. I know everything about him already. And I'm like, well, you're wrong. You know, I got picked on and bullied and beat up all my whole childhood till I was, like, done with high school. I didn't get full size till I was, like, 22. And, like, the person I've become has been a work in progress and growing. And I'm always trying to better myself and not be that guy from Queens that I sound like.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of that. But to come out on my first word of a set and be like, I'm nice guy, like, it's not as funny as it could be, where I go, all right, this is who you think I am. I'll start with those jokes, you know, my girlfriend's a pain in the ass and she's crazy, but at the end that bit goes, actually, I'm the one with the ADD.
Yeah.
And oops, you know, I love my girlfriend. Listen to your girlfriend is the whole moral of the story. I'm like, oh, I never thought you'd go there. I'm like, now you know I'm not that guy. But
yeah.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
It's this amazing redemption arc that you kind of take us on this journey. And I feel like in stories like that, it also gives, as an audience member, it gives me permission to be okay with mistakes I've made. it gives me permission to hear, oh, here is this, here is, so those of you who don't see him, he is tall, he's bigger than me, he's from Queens, and you make assumptions about a man like that, and for me to be able to be part of the audience and see, oh, here's a man admitting that he made a mistake, and he's able to laugh about it. He's getting us to laugh with him. And it just, I feel like that opens the door to, like, you know what, maybe I make mistakes too.
And it's sometimes a green light to guys to be like, you know what, listen to your girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know?
Hopefully.
Or, you know, go to therapy. You can actually benefit from it. You know? If I look like a reject from Sopranos, you wouldn't think I was in couples therapy.
But it makes
it makes a lot of guys going, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's not like a loser thing to do, or it's not like a sign of weakness. I'm like, no, dude, if you think I'm funny or you think I'm that guy, you can too. And it's about being better for yourself and better for everyone. Like, friends I have and relationships I've had since then, awesome.
Oh, that's beautiful to hear. I'm curious now, because you talked about how you used to be bullied, you used to get picked on.
Yeah.
Was comedy important to you when you were young then, or did it become a part of your life later on?
Yeah, comedy was a defense mechanism, 100%.
Oh.
I tell a story all the time. My first fake ID was to go to the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah.
I was there every week from like 16 on. And I realized that was my way, you know, out or whatever. Make him laugh, make him feel bad for picking on me because he's cool, he's funny. And I would sit at the Cellar and study the legends back then and just like, I could do that. That'll help, you know? And it did. It did. By the time I started making him laugh, it started stopping. Then all of a sudden I started growing up and getting bigger. But I was still that little doofy kid that got picked on. Little Napoleon complex, even though I'm 6'1" now.
Yeah. Oh, I love that comedy became a safe place for you, and I love that you went to the comedy club with your fake ID instead of somewhere else. And I know you saw some legends there.
Oh, the best.
Because you were, this was up in New York, and had the Boston crew you were talking about before.
Yep. I was so lucky in those years to see like that whole Boston crew of Louis C.K., Bill Burr, Patrice O'Neill, Jim Norton, Rich Voss, Godfrey, Greer Barnes, David Tell, Jeff Ross. Those were every night these guys were there. And I'm like 16 going, these are gods. They are amazing. And I'm crying, laughing. And anytime my friends wanted to do something, that's where we went. I can't tell you how many first dates I went there. It's the perfect first date, by the way.
Explain.
Because, you know, it's a little awkward at first.
Sure.
You know, what do you talk about? Like, you do a little bit of talking before the show starts. Mm-hmm. But it's funny how much you can gather about a person just sitting next to them at a comedy show.
Oh, I feel like you get so much. I mean,
all I need by the time the show's over.
You get so much of their personality, how they respond to the jokes. Do you have any good stories about red flags or?
Sometimes just their laugh gets on my nerves.
Okay, that's
too
that's
loud,
just
a little
like,
obnoxious, a little grandstanding. Ha ha ha. I'm like, oh, I don't like you.
Nope.
Or they talk too much. Are they like, oh yeah, me too?
Or talking over the comedian and it's like, nope, he's the one with the mic.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Good etiquette. I wanted to ask, so that was part of your like comedy education.
Right.
When did you decide you wanted to be on stage?
About a month before I met you.
Really?
I mean, I always dreamed of it.
Yeah.
But that class we took was a gift from my girlfriend, now fiance.
Yeah.
And she was like, I know you've always dreamed of doing it. We're getting married. Here's your birthday gift. Go do it. And I was like, oh, no. I actually have to do it now? And it was nerve-wracking. And I'm still mad at her for this. She ends up, when we had our showcase, she told all my friends.
No, that was amazing. I remember that night. It was packed with your people.
Yeah, but that's so nerve-wracking to never do it, you know? I'm like, no, we got to do this in secret. Tell no one. I might be terrible. Oh. I probably will be terrible. It was funny. When she got that class, I was at the Comedy Store one night, and I was watching like a roast battle or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was two like, you know, amateur comics. And it was this one guy, Mikey, who won his roast. And I bumped into him outside, and I was picking his brain the way I always did at the Cellar with every comic. I just like absorb every information I can like a sponge. And he said something like, we were hanging out for a while. He's like, you seem funny. Why don't you go do a mic? I was like, no. He's like, I bet you're the funny one of your friends. Of course. He's like, so then why not do it? I was like, all right, true talk. Yes, I'm the funny one amongst my friends, but if I go try it professionally and fail and I'm officially not funny, I don't know if I could take that ego hit.
Yeah.
And he's like, that sound, you don't seem like a weak guy like that. I was like, no, but the worst part is if I'm not funny and all my friends think I'm funny, that means that they're all stupid too. That means we're all living in a fake bubble of what we think is funny. And that, I can't blow up my universe like that. And then I bumped into him 3-4 weeks later at a bar doing trivia, actually. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know what? Pick your pants up. We're going right now. And he dragged me to a mic.
So was that your first time?
That was my first time ever.
Wow.
I did an open mic, and he's like, we pull up to the place. He's like, I'm going to put you up first because they know me. Do you have any jokes? I was like, no. He's like, what are you going to talk about? I was like, I hate Drake.
Oh, yeah?
And then he's like, you got 5 minutes? I was like, yeah. It went extremely well.
Wow.
And I get off. He goes, you just did 8 minutes. He's like, you should do this.
Wow.
And then by the time I got to Flappers, it went well.
Oh, my gosh.
I'd never been so scared in my life. The second I got off stage and I got those big claps, I texted my girl who got me the class.
Yeah.
Like, meet me outside right now. And I just hugged the hell out of her.
Oh.
It's like, that was everything I ever dreamed of. And I haven't stopped since.
Yeah, you work really hard. I feel like every time I talk to you, you're seeing shows. You're doing shows almost every day of the week.
Yeah. It's a lot. And I'm loving it. It's a dream, really.
What do you think comedy or being on stage has taught you so far in these last, like, 8 or 9 months?
I would say it taught me that no one has any idea what they're doing. And I don't mean in comedy, I mean in life.
Yeah. Oh.
Like, we're all trying to figure it out.
Absolutely.
And you can have a random joke up there, and they're like, yep, never thought of that. Like, it just kind of, like, it feels like we're all, like, in the same boat, mm-hmm. trying to navigate life.
Yeah, I mean, I have a story for how I learned that when I was 10, but I don't think it's really funny, so I don't know.
Well, I want to hear it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So Hurricane Andrew.
Okay.
Was when I realized that adults don't know what the fuck they're doing. It was like, you know, at 10, you think your parents have it figured out. They're the ones who are organized, who get you fed and so forth. And I saw my parents not knowing what to do. I saw the news anchors not knowing what to do. I saw them changing their minds. And I saw everyone on news just kind of like panicking. And then the devastation afterwards.
Right.
We went for days without any federal aid. I was just like, oh my gosh. Adults know. They don't know what they're doing.
It's a clusterfuck.
Yeah. They don't know what they're doing. And that's, you know what? I guess I can do it too.
Right.
And I think that, like, instead of giving up and saying, like, oh, no, no one knows, it's like, oh, they don't know. Maybe it's okay that I don't know. Maybe I can still try.
Yeah. It's funny. I worked in finance and, like, we work with startups. And the first time I raised money for my startup,
yeah,
I called my other friend, who's my best friend, who's also in finance. I go, Mike, it's all bullshit. No one knows what they're doing. There's no secret sauce. There's no, like, backdoor smart people thing. There's no formula. We're all just full of shit. And it's the most freeing feeling of all time.
Yeah. It really, it really is. Like, you can let it be freeing, or you can let it kind of scare you, right? And it's better when it frees you and you can just,
I think that's what the comedy room is sometimes. Like, it's just a lot for me. It's just like, yeah, we're all just having fun trying to figure it out. And you're like, I feel like people go to comedy shows to hear a point of view or something different. You know, they're not just want to hear knock-knock jokes. They want to hear something original. And when they hear it, they're like, yeah. Like, you learned something, I learned something. We're doing this life thing right now.
Do you feel like that gave you a chance to not hold your ego so close? Like, you were afraid of failing because you were afraid your ego would take a hit. And now that you've learned, everyone's just kind of winging it. Do you feel like your ego,
it's become a monster now. It's the opposite. It's just like incredible Hulk monster. Like, I crave more laughs now. I'm capable of this. More. I need more. And it drives me to get better. And, you know, I haven't been doing it long, but I can already see a huge difference. And, like, I am getting better. There is progress. You know, I wouldn't say I'm good yet, but I'm progressing very quickly, and it's amazing to watch.
What would you say is your goal then with comedy? And you're still improving. Yeah. I mean, what's your goal?
I just want to be, like, accepted as a comic. I don't know, like, how to, like, I hold comedy very high when it comes to art. Mm. Like, probably above musicians. Like, I think it's such an important art in the world. It doesn't get enough credit. Mm-hmm. It does change the mindset of the country. Like, it can change people. It's very important to me. My goal would just to be like, yeah, Larry, he's a good comic. Like, I've had moments in green rooms with, like, Bill Burr, and they were like, that was funny. Or Eliza Schlesinger gave me an awesome compliment, took a picture of me. She's like, you killed. I was like, I feel like prom queen. I'm like, no. Tell me more.
Tell me again.
I guess big goal, high, like, dream goal is to just be, like, a club comic legend, like a Dave Attell or, you know, Eddie Pepitone, even Godfrey. Like, guys are just, you walk in a club, you know it's their house.
Mm-hmm.
You're a guest.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool.
That's, yeah, the club comedian. Do you feel the desire to have any kind of, like, cultural impact, or is comedy an escape, or what is comedy for you?
I would love to be, like, an impact comic. I would love to, I don't know, get the attention of the people I grew up around that I left because they weren't like me, and get them to be a little more like me, a little more open, involved, and maybe listen to women more, and get rid of your little neighborhood prejudices or whatever it is, and, like, just get to be better people. And I think I could be, like, an ambassador to them.
Mm-hmm.
And also let the other side of the world see that people like me can be good too.
Yeah.
We're not all the 80s movie villain. Sweep the leg, Johnny. Like,
that's happened a lot. Yeah.
I think a lot of people see me that way. And I'm like, well, we're not all like that. And bringing people together is the best thing ever. It's all I want to do every day, is just be around a bunch of friends and good people and have good times. It's like a problem, honestly. My wife's like, when are we going to have time alone? I'm like, but there's so many cool people that want to hang out with us.
You're definitely extroverted.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Oh, I was going to ask, like, you did all of this, like, comedy growth or, like, study in New York.
Mm.
Do you want to talk about the difference between LA comics and New York comics?
Oh, my God.
I mean, you could pass if you worried you'll upset someone. No.
I've said it on stage, so I'll say it here.
Yeah.
I do feel like there's a bit of a difference where New York comics want to become the best comic in that room.
Mm.
They want to own that room. They want to give everyone in that room the best experience they've ever had. And they want to be remembered for that. I think LA comics want to become funny, like, do the jokes that the audience will, that they want to hear, so that they can become famous and have a special or a movie or, like, a jumping off place. So, like, neither one's wrong, but I think there is a difference where New York comics are cool with the clubs and LA comics want more.
Do you think that changes their style of comedy?
100%.
Like, well, can you talk about how the style or how they approach the crowd?
I would say, like, LA comics are doing jokes that they think the audience wants to hear.
Yeah.
And New York comics are doing what they want to say.
Oh, okay. That's pretty different.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you can sit in a room like the Cellar and hear, mm-hmm, a completely different perspective of something that you might actually completely disagree with. And by the end of the hour, you're like, I love that guy and I might be wrong.
Wow. And that is exactly what you were talking about with your comedy, like, giving a chance, like, that kind of shifting what people's expectations are of you,
mm-hmm,
and then shifting their point of view by bringing them along with you on this kind of journey.
Yeah. I think all those comedy shows I went to were, like, therapy, like, made me a better person. Like,
wow.
I'm like, oh, I learned something new every day. Like, he's right. Oh, wow, that's right. Oh, is that what that's like? And you go home going, this is so cool. There's no one else doing anything like that.
Yeah. Would you, what advice would you have for someone who was interested in being a comic on stage? What would you tell them?
Just do it. Do a mic. Make friends. Get it out. Like, I have a couple, you know, brand new comic friends, and they ask me for advice, and they're like, what should I do with that joke? What should I do with this joke? And they just started. I go, don't even worry about that right now.
Yeah.
I go, the one compliment I'll accept about my comedy is I look comfortable up there.
That's exactly what Steven was talking about.
Yeah, and he's even better at it than I am.
But
that's one I'll take, because once you're comfortable, you could just be reading a book, and sometimes you can captivate them, and you can worry about the jokes later. Like, mm-hmm. having the stage presence is almost the hardest part. You can learn the jokes, because I don't think any of my jokes are, like, brilliant, or maybe not even make you laugh on paper, but the way I do it on stage works. And I'm hoping that as I do with it and put more years in time, I get better at writing brilliant jokes, you know?
Yeah.
But right now, I'm just taking the opportunity to do these rooms and these stages I never thought I'd be on, and I'm doing them regularly to get better.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's being comfortable up there is the first thing.
Do you feel the push of bringer culture too, like the comedy bringer shows, or do you...
I've seen it.
You've seen it. What are your thoughts on it? Yeah, because I mean, I see that like a lot of comedians starting out, there's a big push to bring your own crowd.
Right.
Go ahead, and what do you think about?
It's funny. From what I've told, it's mostly an LA thing too.
Oh, really?
Just word of mouth. They're like, really? That's really big in LA and not as big anywhere else. As a new comic, I don't have a problem with the bringer thing as long as I'm getting opportunities that are worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I get to do a show with my favorite comic, I mean, my friends are coming anyway. And, you know, I have like a small fan base now. And if I tell them to come, they just want to come. They want to see their friend doing well. They want to hear the new joke you wrote. Like, it's kind of like a tit for tat, or whatever you want to call it. Like, it's bittersweet. Like, bring five. And I'm like, I've done those shows. I'm like, dude, I'm bringing like 15. Yeah. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm on a show with my favorite comics. I'm like, don't even worry about that. And it's funny because now those guys, like, they always said the same thing. It's like, you got the right mindset. Mm. Like, some people try to count dollars and go, oh, well, he made $100 off me. I'm like, dude, you're living your dream. You would never get on that stage otherwise. Mm. You know, I would say stay away from the little bringer shows where it's all amateur comics. And then that, like, bring five to that. And you're like, well, no, because that's kind of disrespectful to your friends.
Yeah.
You know?
I see what you're saying, like, making a distinction between a bigger bringer show and where you get to be on stage with, like, good comedians, but you're getting, like, legitimate stage time, and just an amateur night where...
Those feel like money grabs. Yeah.
They do. They feel like the club is just, whatever it is just trying to make money off of you and, yeah.
And I think as a comic, like, that's kind of the goal when you're new like me. It's like to get in front of a legend and let them hear your set. Like, if I got to bring five friends to get that opportunity, sure.
You know?
Like I said, I had a great interaction with Eliza. She loved my set. That was a bringer show.
Yeah.
And
wow.
She came back. She was like, that was amazing. What's your name? Take a picture. Let's go. And I'm like,
wow.
Dream come true.
Yeah. Oh, that is. I remember when that happened. I'm so excited for you.
Oh, I was like a little kid. You should see the picture. It's terrible. I look like a doofus.
Oh.
And it was funny. I put my foot in my mouth with her that day, actually.
Yeah.
I said, I go, Eliza, I got to say. Actually, first of all, I showed her a picture I took with her like 15 years ago at Caroline's. Yeah. Long time ago at Caroline's, and I was like, I gotta say, I really think you might be the greatest female comic of all time, and I do believe that. And she had the best retort to that. Why'd you say female?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yep, foot and mouth, got
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Learned something
I was
today.
Just gonna say, I was like, oh, that totally stuck out of my mind too. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
It was supposed to be a compliment, but yep.
But
I was
yep.
like, you're right.
You're right.
My bad. I'm like, well, from grading that way, you're not the best. There's more ahead of you, sorry.
There's a few more. I guess you could have said one of the greatest.
Oh, she's definitely one of that.
Yes.
I think she's top
is.
10 all the time.
Oh, I've seen her. I saw her at a secret comedy show here in the Valley.
And she's so fucking cool, too.
She
even hanging out with her.
Man, she just showed up, and I saw her give 100% to this small room of like 20 people, and it was like magic.
Yep.
And it was I couldn't help but feel like
part of it.
Yeah,
that's the beauty, right? I just started learning that and doing it. You know, I actually learned it from Stephen Marcus. You know, I asked him, like, what do you do? Like, he did a show in San Diego, and he said it was like 8 people there. You know, I was like, what do you do? He goes, I did that show for those 8 people.
Wow.
Like, eye contact, it was just me and them. We were hanging out. And I was like, yep, that's the right way to do it. You don't just do it like a regular show. You
oh
do it like
God.
You're sitting at a dinner table now. And I took that with me, and I've been doing that since. And he goes, it even works for big rooms. Just pick one group and do this joke for them and pick another group, do it for them, and the whole audience feels like they're more part of the show.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
It makes sense because when you see some of these great comedians, you see them looking in the eye at the audience. You see them connecting.
And the whole audience feels it too. Even though you're not looking at them, they're like, oh, he likes that guy.
Yeah.
And that guy's us.
Yeah, absolutely.
The first time I actually, like, I don't know, enacted it, I did a show in Las Vegas called Silent But Deadly.
Uh-huh.
And very weird looking show, but a lot of comics were like, you have to do this show. It's kind of like a rite of passage type thing. It's a new idea. It's a silent disco type comedy show. Weird.
I don't even think I understand, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'll get there.
Yeah.
So it's in Vegas, that big Area 15 hangar where it's like the whole building is like a giant mushroom trip, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like an adult playground type thing. And in the middle of the whole building, they set up like a loungy area for a comedy show. But because it's so loud, everyone has headphones on that can only hear you talk on the mic.
Oh.
And then when they intro the show, they go, look, this is called Silent But Deadly. If you don't like the comic, feel free to turn your headset off. And the light goes from green to red. So you can watch yourself lose the crowd.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, it sounds cool. And it was kind of like a dare amongst comics. Like, see if you got it. See how many people you lose. Like a challenge.
Oh my God. What was it like?
Oh, it changed my whole game already. Like,
really?
I went there. Yeah, so I went there. The stage is like in the middle of the room. And it's a little weird with the headsets. You're not totally connecting. And I'm realizing that in the first 30 seconds. I'm like, all right, this is weird. And then I realized that the mic was wireless.
Oh.
So I walked right into the crowd. And I started doing bits like this to this guy. And then walk over and do, there's the old white guy. I'll do a Trump joke for him. I walk over here and do punch in the face for that big jacked guy. And like, you're walking around the crowd in it.
Wow.
Blew my mind. It was the first time I put what Stephen told me into action. It's one of the best shows I ever did. I was like, yep. I just took so much from that experience. Like, yeah, you can actually get in there. You don't physically have to be in the crowd, but you got to get in there, even mentally.
Mentally. And like,
go mix it up.
You're taking the conversation to them. Wow.
Yep. I took that note big time. I was like, my friends were actually at that show. It's the first time my best friend from New York saw me do stand up.
Really?
And he was like, dude, that was amazing. And I was like, yeah, I've never done that before. But yeah, I took a lot away from that show. I can't wait to go back to LA and start doing more shows now. Yeah. I got a whole new little like tool in my tool belt.
Oh, that is fantastic. Are you still, so you're still doing shows here in LA?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any outside of LA in the next couple of months? Or
I do have a couple in San Diego coming up. I do like Ontario and Brea, Vegas once in a while. But in October, around my birthday, I got a couple shows in New York finally.
Oh my gosh.
I got like a whole weekend, like 3 days. Two of them are like my shows I'm producing. One of them I'm a guest on. Very excited to see the New York guys finally see me.
Yes. I can't even imagine. I'm just so excited for what you're going to learn next time you go out of this LA bubble that we're
in.
That's
the most fun. I get excited. What am I going to learn every day?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had another one where a friend of mine was like, hey, you got any shows tonight? I'm like, I did, but I canceled them. I'm exhausted. I need a break.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, man, that's when you get good. You shouldn't do that.
Oh.
And I was like, fuck, he's right. All right, I'm going.
Do you have another show after this?
I got two tonight, yeah.
Two tonight?
Yeah. But I went and got up that day and did that show, and it went well. And I had came up with a couple new tags that day. And I was like, he's right. He's like, if you're going to do it, you got to figure out how to get good when you're tired, too.
I feel like that's really great advice. And I feel like that can also apply to other passions that we have in our life or other creative endeavors.
Yeah, I'm not creative any other way, but it makes sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you are. Like, I see you as a professional comedian, and I see how hard you work for it. And even just that, finding times when you're tired and still working through it, it's inspiring.
Thank you.
So thank you for sharing that.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it made me feel stupid for saying I canceled it because I'm tired. It's like, what are you doing? People would kill for that show, and you're just going to throw it away because you're tired? I was like, shit, he's right.
Yeah, and here we are.
Yeah. Sleep is just a memory now. That's not existing.
Oh, I feel like I'm too old to give up on sleep yet. I really enjoy it now.
I had to put ice cubes on my eyes before this.
And a cup of coffee. Yeah, well,
multiple.
Tell us what shows you got coming in July that you're excited about.
Oh, sure. July 10th, I'm doing the Ice House with Eddie Pepitone. July 14th, I'm doing the Hollywood Improv called The Jump Off. Very good lineup. And then I think it's July 22nd, I'm at the Comedy Store. Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Larry.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Oh, I hope we have you back again. Yeah.
And listen, you're part of my team now. So whatever we do from here on, it's me and you.
All right. I'm in.
I love it.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us again here at Laugh Lines. That was Larry White, and you can find him at Larry from Queens on Instagram. Hope to see you at one of his shows soon. And as always, thank you to co-producer and sound editor Grant Johnson. Take care, everyone.